protects me from panic at first. And then I breathe the close air and stare into the empty darkness, and my insides squeeze tighter and tighter. I can't breathe anymore. I can't breathe. I bite down on my lip to keep from sobbing. I don't want Amar to see me cry. Don't want him to tell the Dauntless that I'm a coward. I have to think, can't think, through the suffocation of this box. The wall against my back here is the same as the one in my memory from when I was young, shut in the darkness in the upstairs hallway as punishment. I was never sure when it would end, how many hours I would be stuck there with imaginary monsters creeping up on me in the dark, with the sound of my mother's sobs leaking through the walls. I slam my hands against the wall in front of me again and again, then claw at it, though the splinters stab the skin under my fingernails. I put up my forearms and hit the box with the full weight of my body again and again, closing my eyes so I can pretend I'm not in here. I'm not in here. Let me out, let me out, let me out, let me out.
Think it through, Stiff.
A voice shouts, and I go still. I remember that this is a simulation. Think it through. What do I need to get out of this box? I need a tool, something stronger than I am. I nudge something with my toes and reach down to pick it up, but when I reach down, the top of the box moves with me and I can't straighten again. I swallow a scream and find the pointy end of a crowbar with my fingers. I wedge it between the boards that form the left corner of the box and push as hard as I can. All the boards spring apart at once and fall on the ground before me. I breathe the fresh air, relieved. Then a woman appears in front of me. I don't recognize her face, and her clothes are white, not belonging to any faction. I move toward her, and a table springs up in front of me with a gun and a bullet on it. I frown at it. Is this a fear?
Who are you?
I ask her, and she doesn't answer. It's clear what I'm supposed to do. Load the gun, fire the bullet. Dread builds inside me as powerful as any fear. My mouth goes dry and I fumble for the bullet and the gun. I've never held a gun before, so it takes me a few seconds to figure out how to open the chamber of the pistol. In those seconds, I think of the light leaving her eyes, this woman I don't know enough to care about her. I am afraid. I'm afraid of what I will be asked to do in Dauntless, of what I will want to do. Afraid of some kind of hidden violence inside me, wrought by my father and by the years of silence my faction forced on me. I slide the bullet into the chamber, then hold the gun in both hands, the cut in my palm throbbing. I look at the woman's face. Her lower lip wobbles and her eyes fill with tears. I'm sorry, I say, and I pull the trigger. I see the dark hole the bullet creates in her body, and she falls to the floor, evaporating into a cloud of dust on contact. But the dread doesn't go away. I know that something's coming. I can feel it building inside me. Marcus has not appeared yet, and he will. I know it as surely as I know my own name. Our name. A circle of light envelops me, and at its edge, I see worn gray shoes pacing. Marcus Eaton steps into the edge of the light. But not the Marcus Eaton I know. This one has pits for eyes, and a gaping black maw instead of a mouth. Another Marcus Eaton stands beside him, and slowly, all around the circle, more and more monstrous versions of my father step forward to surround me. They're yawning, toothless mouths open wide, their heads tilting at odd angles. I squeeze my hands into fists. It's not real. It's obviously not real. The first Marcus undoes his belt and then slides it out from around his waist, loop by loop. And as he does, so do the other Marcuses. As they do, the belts turn into ropes made of metal, barbed at the ends. They drag their belts in lines across the floor, their oily black tongues sliding over the edges of their dark mouths. At once, they draw back the metal ropes, and I scream at the top of my lungs, wrapping my arms around my head. This is for your own good, the Marcuses say in metallic, united voices like a choir. I feel pain, tearing, ripping, shredding. I fall to my knees and squeeze my arms against my ears like they can protect me, but nothing can protect me. Nothing. I scream again and again, but the pain continues, and so does his voice. I will not have self-indulgent behavior in my house. I did not raise my son to be a liar. I can't hear. I won't hear. An image of the sculpture my mother gave me rises into my mind, unbidden. I see it where I placed it on my desk, and the pain starts to recede. I focus all my thoughts on it, and the other objects scattered around my room, broken, the top of the trunk loose from its hinges. I remember my mother's hands with their slim fingers, closing the trunk and locking it, and handing me the key. One by one the voices disappear until there are none left. I let my arms fall to the ground, waiting for the next obstacle. My knuckles brush the stone floor, which is cold and grainy with dirt. I hear footsteps and brace myself for what's coming. But then I hear Amar's voice.
That's it? He says. That's all there is?
God, Stiff. He stops next to me and offers me his hand. I take it and let him pull me to my feet. I don't look at him. I don't want to see his expression. I don't want him to know what he knows. Don't want to become the pathetic initiate with the messed up childhood.
We should come up with another name for you, he says casually. Something tougher than Stiff. Like Blade or Killer or something.
At that, I do look at him. He's smiling a little. I do see some pity in that smile, but not as much as I thought I would.
I wouldn't want to tell people my name either, he says. Come on, let's get some food.
Amar walks me over to the initiate's table once we're in the dining hall. There are a few Dauntless already sitting at the surrounding tables, eyeing the other side of the room where pierced and tattooed chefs are still setting out the food. The dining hall is a cavern lit from beneath by blue-white lamps, giving everything an eerie glow. I sit down in one of the empty chairs.
Gee, Stiff, you look like you're about to faint, Eric says,
and one of the Candor boys grins.
You all made it out alive, Amar says. Congratulations. You made it through the first day of initiation, with varying degrees of success.
He looks at Eric.
None of you did as well as four over here, though.
He points at me as he speaks. I frown.
Four?
Is he talking about my fears?
Hey, Tori, Amar calls over his shoulder. You ever hear of anyone having only four fears in their fear landscape?
Last I heard, the record was seven or eight. Why?
Tori calls back.
I've got a transfer over here with only four fears.
Tori points at me, and Amar nods.
That's gotta be a new record, Tori says.
Well done, Amar says to me. Then he turns and walks toward Tori's table.
All the other initiates stare at me, wide-eyed and quiet. Before the fear landscape, I was just someone they could step on their way to Dauntless membership. Now I'm like Eric, someone worth watching out for. Maybe even someone worth being afraid of. Amar gave me more than a new name. He gave me power.
What's your real name again?
Starts with an E?
Eric asks me, narrowing his eyes like he knows something but isn't sure that now is the time to share it. The others might remember my name, too, vaguely, from the choosing ceremony. The way I remember theirs. Just letters in an alphabet buried under a nervous haze as I anticipated my own choice. If I strike at their memories now, as hard as I can, become as memorable as my dauntless self as possible, I can maybe save myself. I hesitate for a moment, then put my elbows on the table and raise my eyebrows at him. My name is Four, I say. Call me Stiff again, and you and I will have a problem. He rolls his eyes, but I know I've made myself clear. I have a new name, which means I can be a new person. Someone who doesn't put up with cutting comments from erudite know-it-alls. Someone who can cut back. Someone who's finally ready to fight. 4. The initiate.
The training room smells like effort, like sweat and dust and shoes. Every time my fist hits the punching bag, it stings my knuckles, which are split open from a week of dauntless fights.
So, I guess you saw the boards,
Omar says, leaning against the doorframe. He crosses his arms. And realize that you're up against Eric tomorrow, or else you would be in the Fear landscape room instead of in here. I come in here too, I say, and I back away from the bag, shaking out my hands. Sometimes I clench my hands so hard I start to lose feeling in my fingertips. I almost lost my first fight against the Amity girl Mia. I didn't know how to beat her without hitting her, and I couldn't hit her. At least, not until she had me in a chokehold and my vision was starting to go black at the edges. My instincts took over, and just one hard elbow to her jaw knocked her down. I still feel guilt curling up inside me when I think about it. I almost lost the second fight, too, against the bigger Kander boy, Sean. I wore him out, crawling to my feet every time he thought I was finished. He didn't know that pushing through pain is one of my oldest habits, learned young, like chewing on my thumbnail or holding my fork in my left hand instead of my right. Now my face is patchworked with bruises and cuts, but I proved myself. Tomorrow, my opponent is Eric. Beating him will take more than a clever move or persistence. It will take skill I don't have, strength I haven't earned.
Yeah, I know, Omar laughs. See, I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what your deal is, so I've been asking around. Turns out you're in here every morning and in the Fear landscape room every night. You never spend any time with the other initiates. You're always exhausted and you sleep like a corpse.
A drop of sweat rolls down the back of my ear. I wipe it away with my taped up fingers, then drag my arm across my forehead.
Joining a faction is about more than getting through initiation, you know, Omar says, and he hooks his fingers in the chain that the punching bag dangles from, testing its strength.
For most of the Dauntless, they meet their best friends during initiation. Their girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever. Enemies, too.
But you seem determined not to have any of those things.
I've seen the other initiates together, getting pierced together, and showing up to training with red studded noses and ears and lips, or building towers out of food scraps at the breakfast table. It never even occurred to me that I could be one of them, or that I should try to be. I shrug. I'm used to being alone.
Well, I feel like you're about to snap, and I don't really want to be there when it happens, he says.
Come on. A bunch of us are going to play a game tonight. A dauntless game.
I pick at the tape covering one of my knuckles. I shouldn't go out and play games. I should stay here and work and then sleep so I'm ready to fight tomorrow. But that voice, the one that says, should, now sounds to me like my father's voice, requiring me to behave, to isolate myself. And I came here because I was ready to stop listening to that voice.
I'm offering you some dauntless status for no particular reason other than that I feel bad for you, he says. Don't be stupid and miss this opportunity.
Fine, I say. What's the game? Omar just smiles.
The game is dare.
A dauntless girl, Lauren, is holding on to the handle on the side of the train car, but she keeps swaying so she almost falls out, then giggling and pulling herself back in, like the train isn't suspended 2 stories above the street, like she wouldn't break her neck if she fell out. In her free hand is a silver flask. It explains a lot. She tilts her head.
First person picks someone and dares them to do something. Then that person has to drink, does the dare, and gets a chance to dare someone else to do something. And when everyone has done their dare or died trying, we get a little drunk and stumble home.
How do you win?
one of the Dauntless calls out from the other side of the train car. A boy who sits slouched against a Mar like their old friends, or brothers. I'm not the only initiate in the train car. Sitting across from me is Zeke, the first jumper, and a girl with brown hair and bangs cut straight across her forehead and a pierced lip. The others are older, Dauntless members all. They have a kind of ease with one another, leaning into one another, punching one another's arms, tousling one another's hair. It's camaraderie and friendship and flirtation, and none of it is familiar to me. I try to relax, bending my arms around my knees. I really am a stiff.
You win by not being a little pansy cake, Lauren says. And hey, new rule? You also win by not asking dumb questions. I'm gonna go first, as the keeper of the alcohol, she adds. Amar, I dare you to go into the erudite library while all the noses are studying and scream something obscene.
She screws the cap on the flask and tosses it to him. Everyone cheers as Amar takes the cap off and takes a swallow of whatever liquor is inside.
Just tell me when we get to the right stop, he shouts over the cheering.
Zeke waves a hand at me.
Hey, you're a transfer, right? 4?
Yeah, I say. Nice first jump. I realize too late that it might be a sore spot for him. His moment of triumph stolen by a misstep and a loss of balance. But he just laughs.
Yeah, not my finest moment, he says.
Not like anyone else stepped up, the girl at his side says. I'm Shauna, by the way.
Is it true you only had 4 fears?
Hence the name, I say.
Wow.
She nods. She looks impressed, which makes me sit up straighter.
Guess you were born dauntless.
I shrug, like what she says might be true, even though I'm sure it's not. She doesn't know that I came here to escape the life I was meant for, that I'm fighting so hard to get through initiation so I don't have to admit that I'm an imposter. Abnegation born, abnegation result, in a dauntless haven. The corners of her mouth turn down like she's sad about something, but I don't ask what it is.
How are your fights going?
Zeke asks me. All right, I say. I wave a hand over my bruised face, as you can clearly tell.
Check it out.
Zeke turns his head, showing me a large bruise on the underside of his jaw.
That's thanks to this girl over here.
He indicates Shauna with his thumb.
He beat me, Shauna says, but I got a good shot in for once. I keep losing.
It doesn't bother you that he hit you? I say.
Why would it?
She says.
I don't know, I say. Because you're a girl?
She raises her eyebrows.
What? You think I can't take it just like every other initiate, just because I have girl parts?
She gestures to her chest, and I catch myself staring just for a second, before I remember to look away, my face flushing.
Sorry, I say. I didn't mean it that way. I'm just not used to this.
Any of it.
Sure, I get it,
she says, and she doesn't sound angry.
But you should know that about Dauntless. Girl, guy, whatever. It doesn't matter here. What matters is what you've got in your gut.
Then Amar gets up, putting his hands on his hips in a dramatic stance, and marches toward the open doorway. The train dips down and Amar doesn't even hold on to anything. He just shifts and sways with the car's movement. Everyone gets up, and Amar is the first one to jump, launching himself into the night. The others stream out behind him, and I let the people behind me carry me toward the opening. I'm not afraid of the speed of the train, just the heights. But here the train is close to the ground, so when I jump, I do it without fear. I land on 2 feet, stumbling for a few steps before I stop.
Look at you getting your train legs,
Amar says, elbowing me.
Here, have a sip. You look like you need it.
He holds out the flask. I've never tasted alcohol. The abnegation don't drink it, so it wasn't even available. But I've seen how comfortable it seems to make people,
and I desperately want to feel like I'm not wrapped up in skin that's too tight for me to wear. So I don't hesitate. I take the flask and drink. The alcohol burns and tastes like medicine, but it goes down fast, leaving me warm.
Good job,
Amar says, and he moves on to Zeke, hooking his arm around Zeke's neck and dragging Zeke's head against his chest.
I see you've met my young friend, Ezekiel. Just because my mom calls me that doesn't mean you have to, Zeke says, throwing Amar off.
He looks at me. Amar's grandparents were friends with my parents.
Were? Well, my dad's dead and so are the grandparents, Zeke says.
What about your parents? I ask Amar.
He shrugs. Died when I was young. Train accident. Very sad.
He grins like it's not.
And my grandparents took the jump after I became an official member of Dauntless.
He makes a careening gesture with his hand, suggesting a dive.
The jump? Ah, don't tell him while I'm here, Zeke says, shaking his head. I don't want to see the look on his face.
Amar doesn't pay attention.
Elderly Dauntless sometimes take a flying leap into the unknown of the chasm when they hit a certain age. It's that or be factionless, Amar says. And my grandpa was really sick. Cancer. Grandma didn't care to go on without him.
He tilts his head up to the sky and his eyes reflect the moonlight. For a moment, I feel like he is showing me a secret self, one carefully hidden beneath layers of charm and humor and dauntless bravado. And it scares me, because that secret self is hard and cold and sad. I'm sorry, I say.
At least this way I got to say my goodbyes, Amar says. Most of the time death just comes whether you've said goodbye or not.
The secret self vanishes with the flash of a smile, and Amar jogs toward the rest of the group, flask in hand. I stay back with Zeke. He lopes along, somehow clumsy and graceful at once, like a wild dog.
What about you? Zeke says. You have parents?
One, I say. My mother died a long time ago. I remember the funeral, with all the abnegation filling our house with quiet chatter. Staying with us in our grief. They carried us meals on metal trays, covered with tin foil, and cleaned our kitchen, and boxed up all my mother's clothes for us so there were no traces of her left. I remember them murmuring that she died from complications with another child. But I had a memory of her, a few months before her death, standing in front of her dresser, buttoning up her loose second shirt over the tight undershirt, her stomach flat. I shake my head a little, banishing the memory. She's dead. It's a child's memory. Unreliable.
And your dad? Is he okay with your choice? He says. Visiting day's coming up, you know.
No, I say distantly. He's not okay with it at all. My father will not come on visiting day. I'm sure of it. He will never speak to me again. The erudite sector is cleaner than any other part of the city. Every scrap of trash or rubble cleared from the pavement. Every crack in the street shored up with tar. I feel like I need to step carefully rather than mar the sidewalk with my sneakers. The other dauntless walk along carelessly, the soles of their shoes making slapping sounds like pattering rain. Every faction headquarters is allowed to have the lights on in its lobby at midnight, but everything else is supposed to be dark. Here, in the erudite sector, each building that makes up erudite headquarters is like a pillar of light. The windows we walk past feature the erudite sitting at long tables, their noses buried in books or screens, or talking quietly to one another. The young and the old mix together at every table, in their impeccable blue clothing, their smooth hair, more than half of them with gleaming spectacles. Vanity. My father would say. They are so concerned with looking intelligent that they make themselves fools for it. I pause to watch them. They don't look vain to me. They look like people who make every effort to feel as smart as they are supposed to be. If that means wearing glasses with no prescription, it isn't my place to judge. They are a haven I might have chosen. Instead, I chose the haven that mocks them through the windows, that sends Amar into their lobby to cause a stir. Amar reaches the doors of the central erudite building and pushes through them. We watch from just outside, snickering. I peer through the doors at the portrait of Janine Matthews hanging on the opposite wall. Her yellow hair is pulled back tight from her face, her blue jacket buttoned just beneath her throat. She's pretty, but that's not the first thing I notice about her. Her sharpness is. And beyond that, it could just be my imagination, but does she look a little afraid? Amar runs into the lobby, ignoring the protests of the erudite at the front desk, and yells, "Hey, noses! Check this out!" All the erudite in the lobby look up from their books or screens, and the dauntless burst into laughter as Amar turns, mooning them. The erudite behind the desk run around it to catch him, but Amar pulls up his pants and runs toward us. We all start running, too, sprinting away from the doors. I can't help it. I'm laughing, too, and it surprises me how my stomach aches with it. Zeke runs at my shoulder, and we go toward the train tracks because there's nowhere else to run. The erudite chasing us give up after a block, and we all stop in an alley, leaning against the brick to catch our breath. Amar comes into the alley last, his hands raised, and we cheer for him. He holds up the flask like it's a trophy and points at Shauna. "Young one," he says, "I dare you to scale the sculpture in front of the upper levels building." She catches the flask when he throws it and takes a swig. "You got it," she says, grinning. By the time they get to me, almost everyone is drunk, lurching with each footstep and laughing at every joke, no matter how stupid it is. I feel warm, despite the cool air, but my mind is still sharp, taking in everything about the night, the rich smell of marsh and the sound of bubbling laughter, the blue-black of the sky and the silhouette of each building against it. My legs are sore from running and walking and climbing, and still I haven't fulfilled a dare. We're close to Dauntless headquarters now. The buildings are sagging where they stand.
"Who's left?"
Lauren says, her bleary eyes skipping over each face until she reaches mine.
"Ah, the numerically named initiate from abnegation. 4, is it?"
"Yeah," I say.
"A stiff?"
The boy who sat so comfortably beside Amar looks at me, his words running together. He's the one holding the flask, the one determining the next dare. So far, I've watched people scale tall structures. I've watched them jump into dark holes and wander into empty buildings to retrieve a faucet or a desk chair. I've watched them run naked down alleyways and stick needles through their earlobes without numbing them first. If I was asked to concoct a dare, I would not be able to think of one. It's a good thing I'm the last person to go. I feel a tremor in my chest. Nerves. What will he tell me to do?
"Stiffs are uptight," the boy says plainly, like it's a fact. "So, to prove you're really dauntless now, I dare you to get a tattoo."
I see their ink, creeping over wrists and arms and shoulders and throats. The metal studs through ears and noses and lips and eyebrows. My skin is blank, healed, whole. But it doesn't match who I am. I should be scarred, marked the way they are. But marked with memories of pain, scarred with the things I have survived. I lift a shoulder.
"Fine."
He tosses me the flask, and I drain it, though it stings my throat and lips and tastes bitter as poison. We start toward the pyre. Tori is wearing a pair of men's underwear and a t-shirt when she answers the door, her hair hanging over the left half of her face. She raises an eyebrow at me. We clearly woke her from a sound sleep, but she doesn't seem angry, just a little grouchy.
Please, Amar says, it's for a game of dare.
Are you sure you want a tired woman to tattoo your skin for? This ink doesn't wash off, she says to me.
I trust you, I say. I'm not going to back out of the dare, not after watching everyone else do theirs.
Right,
Tori yawns. The things I do for dauntless tradition. I'll be right back. I'm going to put on pants. She closes the door between us. On the way here, I racked my brain for what I might want tattooed and where. I couldn't decide. My thoughts were too muddled. Still are. A few seconds later, Tori emerges wearing pants, her feet still bare.
If I get in trouble for turning on lights at this hour, I'm going to claim it was vandals and name names.
Got it, I say.
There's a back way.
Come on, she says, beckoning to us. I follow her through the dark living room, which is tidy except for the sheets of paper spread over our coffee table, each one marked with a different drawing. Some of them are harsh and simple, like most of the tattoos I've seen, and others are more intricate, detailed. Tori must be the dauntless approximation of an artist. I pause by the table. One of the pages depicts all the faction symbols, without the circles that usually bind them. The Amity tree is at the bottom, forming a kind of root system for the eye of Erudite and the Candor scales. Above them, the abnegation hands seem almost to cradle the dauntless flames. It's like the symbols are growing into one another. The others have moved past me. I jog to catch up, walking through Tori's kitchen, also immaculate, though the appliances are out of date. The faucet rusted, and the refrigerator door held closed by a large clamp. The back door is open and leads into a short, dank hallway that opens up to the tattoo parlor. I've walked past it before, but never cared to go inside. Sure, I wasn't going to find a reason to attack my own body with needles. I guess I have one now. Those needles are a way for me to separate myself from my past. Not just in the eyes of my fellow dauntless, but in my own eyes. Every time I look at my own reflection. The room's walls are covered in pictures. The wall by the door is entirely dedicated to dauntless symbols. Some black and simple. Some colorful and barely recognizable. Tori turns on the light over one of the chairs and arranges her tattoo needles on a tray next to it. The other dauntless gather on benches and chairs around us like they're getting ready to see a performance of some kind. My face gets hot.
Basic principles of tattooing, Tori says. The less cushion under the skin, or the bonier you are in a particular area, the more painful the tattoo. For your first one, it's probably best to get it done on, I don't know, your arm or
your butt cheek, Zeke suggests with a snort of laughter.
Tori shrugs. It wouldn't be the first time, or the last. I look at the boy who dared me. He raises his eyebrows at me. I know what he expects, what they all expect, that I'll get something small on an arm or a leg, something that's easily hidden. I glance at the wall with all the symbols. One of the drawings in particular catches my eye, an artistic rendering of the flames themselves. That one, I say, pointing to it.
Got it, Tori says. Got a location in mind?
I have a scar, a faint gouge in my knee from when I fell down on the sidewalk as a child. It's always seemed stupid to me that none of the pain I've experienced has left a visible mark. Sometimes, without a way to prove it to myself, I began to doubt that I had lived through it at all, with the memories becoming hazy over time. I want to have some kind of reminder that while wounds heal, they don't disappear forever. I carry them everywhere. Always. And that is the way of things. The way of scars. That is what this tattoo will be for me. A scar. And it seems fitting that it should document the worst memory of pain that I have. I rest my hand on my ribcage, remembering the bruises that were and the fear I felt for my own life. My father had a series of bad nights right after my mother died.
You sure? Tori says. That's maybe the most painful place possible.
Good, I say, and I sit down in the chair. The crowd of dauntless cheer and start passing around another flask, this one bigger than the last, and bronze instead of silver.
So, we have a masochist in the chair tonight. Lovely.
Tori sits on the stool next to me and puts on a pair of rubber gloves. I sit forward, lifting up the hem of my shirt, and she soaks a cotton ball in rubbing alcohol, covering my ribs with it. She's about to move away when she frowns and pulls at my skin with her fingertip. Rubbing alcohol bites into the still healing skin of my back, and I wince.
How did this happen, Four? She asks.
I look up and notice that Amar is staring at me, frowning.
He's an initiate, Amar says. They're all cut and bruised at this point. You should see them all limping around together. It's sad.
I have a giant one on my knee, volunteers Zeke. It's the sickest blue color.
Zeke starts to roll up his pant leg to display his bruise to the others, and they all start sharing their own bruises, their own scars.
Got this when they dropped me after the zip line.
Well, I've got a stab wound from your grip slipping during knife throwing, so I think we're even.
Tori eyes me for a few seconds, and I'm sure she doesn't accept Amar's explanation for the marks on my back. But she doesn't ask again. Instead, she turns on the needle, filling the air with the sound of buzzing, and Amar tosses me the flask. The alcohol is still burning my throat when the tattoo needle touches my ribs, and I wince. But somehow I don't mind the pain. I relish it. The next day, when I wake up, everything hurts, especially my head. Oh, God, my head. Eric is perched on the edge of the mattress next to mine, tying his shoelaces. The skin around the rings in his lip looks red. He must have pierced it recently. I haven't been paying attention. He looks at me.
You look like hell.
I sit up, and the sudden motion makes my head throb more.
I hope that when you lose, you don't use it as an excuse, he says, sneering a little, because I would have beat you anyway.
He gets up, stretches, and leaves the dormitory. I cradle my head in my hands for a few seconds, then get up to take a shower. I have to stand with half my body under the water and half out because of the ink on my side. The Dauntless stayed with me for hours, waiting for the tattoo to be finished. And by the time we left, all the flasks were empty. Tori gave me a thumbs up as I stumbled out of the tattoo parlor, and Zeke slung an arm across my shoulders and said,
I think you're dauntless now.
Last night, I found myself relishing the words. Now I wish I could have my old head back, the one that was focused and determined and didn't feel like tiny men with hammers had taken up residence inside it. I let the cool water spill over me for a few more minutes, then checked the clock on the bathroom wall. 10 minutes to the fight. I'm going to be late. And Eric is right. I'm going to lose. I push my hand into my forehead as I run toward the training room, my feet halfway out of my shoes. When I burst through the doors, the transfer initiates and some of the Dauntless Born initiates are standing around the edge of the room. Amar is in the center of the arena, checking his watch. He gives me a pointed look.
Nice of you to join us, he says.
I see in his raised eyebrows that the camaraderie of the night before does not extend to the training room. He points at my shoes.
Tie your shoes, and don't waste any more of my time.
Across the arena, Eric cracks each one of his knuckles carefully, staring at me the whole time. I tie my shoes in a hurry and tuck the ends of the laces under so they don't get in my way. As I face Eric, I can feel only the pounding of my heart, the throbbing of my head, the burning in my side. Then Amar steps back, and Eric rushes forward, fast, his fist hitting me square in the jaw. I stumble back, holding my face. All the pain runs together in my mind. I put up my hands to block the next punch. My head throbs, and I see his leg move. I try to twist away from the kick, but his foot hits me hard in the ribs. I feel a sensation like an electric shock through the left side of my body.
"This is easier than I thought it would be," Eric says.
I feel hot with embarrassment, and in the arrogant opening he leaves me, I uppercut him in the stomach. The flat of his hand smacks into my ear, making it ring, and I lose my balance, my fingers touching the ground to steady me.
"You know," Eric says quietly, "I think I've figured out your real name."
My eyes are blurry with half a dozen different kinds of pain. I didn't know it came in so many varieties, like flavors, acid and fire and ache and sting. He hits me again, this time trying for my face but getting my collarbone instead. He shakes out his hand and says,
"Should I tell them? Get everything out in the open?"
He has my name between his teeth. Eaton. A far more threatening weapon than his feet or his elbows or his fists. The abnegation say, in hushed voices, that the problem with many erudite is their selfishness, but I think it is their arrogance. The pride they take in knowing things that others do not. In that moment, overwhelmed with fear, I recognize it as Eric's weakness. He doesn't believe that I can hurt him as much as he can hurt me. He believes that I am everything he assumed me to be at the outset. Humble and selfless and passive. I feel my pain disappear into rage, and I grab his arm to hold him in place as I swing at him again and again and again. I don't even see where I'm hitting him. I don't see or feel or hear anything. I am empty, alone, nothing. Then I finally hear his screams. See him clutching his face with both hands, blood soaks his chin, runs into his teeth. He tries to wrench away, but I am holding on as hard as I can, holding on for dear life. I kick him hard in the side so he topples. Over his clutched hands, I meet his eyes. His eyes are glassy and unfocused. His blood is bright against his skin. It occurs to me that I did that. It was me. And fear creeps back in. A different kind of fear this time. A fear of what I am, what I might be becoming. My knuckles throb, and I walk out of the arena without being dismissed. The Dauntless compound is a good place to recover. Dark and full of secret, quiet places. I find a hallway near the pit and sit against the wall, letting the cold from the stone seep into me. My headache has returned, as well as various aches and pains from the fight, but I barely register any of them. My knuckles are tacky with blood. Eric's. I try to rub it off, but it's been drying too long. I won the fight, and that means my place in Dauntless is secure for the time being. I should feel satisfied, not afraid, maybe even happy, to finally belong somewhere, to be among people whose eyes don't skirt mine at the lunch table. But I know that for every good thing that comes along, there is always a cost. What is the cost of being Dauntless?
Hey.
I look up and see Shauna knocking on the stone wall like it's a door. She grins.
This is not quite the victory dance I was expecting.
I don't dance, I say.
Yeah, I should have known better.
She sits across from me, her back against the opposite wall. She draws her knees up to her chest and wraps her arms around them. Our feet are just inches apart. I don't know why I noticed that. Well, yes, I do. She's a girl. I don't know how to talk to girls. Especially not a dauntless girl. Something tells me you can never know what to expect from a dauntless girl.
Eric's in the hospital,
she says, and there's a grin on her face.
They think you broke his nose.
You definitely knocked out one of his teeth. I look down. I knocked out someone's tooth?
I was wondering if you could help me,
she says, nudging my shoe with her toe. As I suspected, dauntless girls are unpredictable. Help you with what?
Fighting. I'm no good at it. I keep getting humiliated in the arena.
She shakes her head.
I have to face off with this girl in 2 days. Her name's Ashley, but she makes everyone call her Ash.
Shauna rolls her eyes.
You know, dauntless flames, Ash, whatever. Anyway, she's one of the best people in our group, and I'm afraid she's going to kill me. Like, actually kill me.
Why do you want my help? I say, suddenly suspicious. Because you know I'm a stiff and we're supposed to help people?
What? No, of course not,
she says, her eyebrows furrow in confusion.
I want your help because you're the best in your group, obviously.
I laugh. No, I'm not.
You and Eric were the only undefeated ones, and you just beat him, so yeah, you are.
Listen, if you don't want to help me, all you have to do is... I'll help, I say. I just don't really know how.
We'll figure it out, she says. Tomorrow afternoon? Meet you in the arena?
I nod. She grins, gets up, and starts to leave. But a few steps away, and she turns around, moving backward down the hallway.
Quit sulking, Four, she says. Everyone's impressed with you. Embrace it.
I watch her silhouette turn the corner at the end of the hallway. I was so disturbed by the fight that I never thought about what beating Eric meant. That I am now first in my initiate class. I may have chosen Dauntless as a haven, but I'm not just surviving here. I'm excelling. I stare at Eric's blood on my knuckles and smile. The next morning I decide to take a risk. I sit with Zeke and Shauna at breakfast. Shauna mostly just slumps over her food and answers questions and grunts. Zeke yawns into his coffee, but he points out his family to me. His little brother Uriah sits at one of the other tables with Lynn, Shauna's little sister. His mother, Hannah, the tamest dauntless I've ever seen, her faction indicated only by the color of her clothing, is still in the breakfast line. Do you miss living at home? I say. The dauntless have a proclivity for baked goods, I've noticed. There are always at least 2 different kinds of cake at dinner, and a mountain of muffins rests on a table near the end of the breakfast line. When I got there, all the good flavors were gone, so I was left with bran.
Not really, he says. I mean, they're right there. Dauntless-born initiates aren't really supposed to talk to family until visiting day, but I know if I really needed something, they'd be there.
I nod. Beside him, Shauna's eyes close, and she falls asleep with her chin resting on her hand.
What about you?
He says.
Do you miss home?
I am about to answer no, but right at that moment Shauna's chin slips off her hand and she smashes her chocolate muffin with her face. Zeke laughs so hard he cries, and I can't help but grin as I finish my juice. Later that morning, I meet Shauna in the training room. She has her short hair pulled back from her face, and her dauntless boots, normally untied and flapping when she walks, laced up tight. She's punching at nothing, pausing between each hit to adjust her position. And for a moment, I watch her, not sure how to start. I only just learned to throw a punch myself. I'm hardly qualified to teach her anything. But as I watch her, I start to notice things. How she stands with her knees locked. How she doesn't hold up a hand to protect her jaw. How she punches from her elbow instead of throwing her body weight behind each hit. She stops, wiping her forehead with the back of her hand. When she notices me, she jumps like she just touched a live wire. Rule number one for not being creepy, she says. Announce your presence in a room if another person doesn't see you come in. Sorry, I say. I was coming up with some pointers for you.
Oh.
She chews on the inside of her cheek.
What are they?
I tell her what I noticed, and then we face off in the fighting arena. We begin slowly, pulling back on each hit so we don't hurt each other. I have to keep tapping her elbow with my fist to remind her to keep her hand up by her face. But a half hour later, she's at least moving better than she was before. This girl you have to fight tomorrow, I say. I'd get her right here, in the jaw. I touch the underside of my jaw. A good uppercut should do it. Let's practice those. She squares off, and I notice with satisfaction that her knees are bent, and there's a bounce in her stance that wasn't there before. We shuffle around each other for a few seconds, and then she punches up. As she does, her left hand drops from her face. I block the first punch, then start to attack the hole she left in her guard. At the last second, I stop my fist in the air and raise my eyebrows at her.
You know, maybe I would learn my lesson if you actually hit me, she says, straightening.
Her skin is flushed from exertion, and sweat shines along her hairline. Her eyes are bright and critical. It occurs to me for the first time that she's pretty. Not in the way I usually think of. She's not soft, delicate, but in a way that's strong, capable. I say, I would really rather not.
What you think is some kind of lingering abnegation chivalry is really kind of insulting, she says. I can take care of myself. I can take a little pain.
It's not that, I say. It's not because you're a girl. I'm not really into violence for no reason.
Some kind of stiff thing, huh? She says.
Not really. Stiffs aren't into violence, period. Put a stiff in Dauntless and they just let themselves get punched a lot, I say, letting myself smile a little. I'm not used to using Dauntless slang, but it feels good to claim it as my own. To let myself relax into their rhythms of speech. It just doesn't feel like a game to me, that's all. It's the first time I've expressed that to anyone. I know why it doesn't feel like a game. Because for so long, it was my reality. It was my waking and my sleeping. Here, I've learned to defend myself. I've learned to be stronger. But one thing I haven't learned, won't let myself learn, is how to enjoy causing someone else pain. If I'm going to become Dauntless, I'm going to do it on my terms, even if that means that a part of me will always be a stiff.
All right, she says. Let's go again.
We spar until she's mastered the uppercut, and we've almost missed dinner. When we leave, she thanks me, and casually she wraps an arm around me. It's just a quick embrace, but she laughs at how tense it makes me.
How to be Dauntless, an introductory course, she says. Lesson one. It's okay to hug your friends here.
We're friends, I say, only halfway joking.
Oh, shut up, she says,
and she jogs down the hallway toward the dormitory. The next morning, all the transfer initiates follow Amar past the training room to a grim hallway with a heavy door at the end of it. He tells us to sit against the wall, and then disappears behind the door without saying anything. I check my watch. Shauna will be fighting any minute now. It's taking the Dauntless Borns longer to get through the first phase of initiation than us, since there are more of them. Eric sits as far away from me as he can, and I'm glad for the distance. The night after I fought him, it occurred to me that he might tell everyone that I'm Marcus Eaton's son just to spite me for beating him. But he hasn't done it. I wonder if he's just waiting for the right opportunity to strike, or if he's holding back for another reason. No matter what, it's probably better for me to stay away from him as much as possible.
What do you think is in there?
Mia, the Amity transfer, sounds nervous. No one answers. For some reason, I don't feel nervous. There's nothing behind that door that can hurt me. so when Amar steps into the hallway again and calls my name first, I don't cast desperate looks at my fellow initiates. I just follow him in. The room is dim and grungy, with just a chair and a computer in it. The chair is reclined, like the one I sat in for my aptitude test. The computer screen is bright and running a program that amounts to lines of dark text on a white background. When I was younger, I used to volunteer at the school in the computer labs, maintaining the facilities, and sometimes even fixing the computers themselves when they failed. I worked under the supervision of an erudite woman named Catherine, and she taught me far more than she had to, happy to share her knowledge with someone who was willing to listen. So I know, looking at that code, what kind of program I'm looking at, though I would never be able to do much with it. A simulation? I say.
The less you know, the better, he says. Sit down.
I sit, leaning back in the chair and setting my arms on the armrests. Amar prepares a syringe, holding it up to the light to make sure the vial is locked in place. He sticks the needle into my neck without warning and presses down on the plunger. I flinch.
Let's see which one of your four fears comes up first, he says. You know, I'm getting kind of bored of them. You might try to show me something new.
I'll work on it, I say. The simulation swallows me. I am sitting on the hard wooden bench at an abnegation kitchen table, an empty plate in front of me. All the shades are drawn over the windows, so the only light comes from the bulb dangling over the table, its filament glowing orange. I stare at the dark fabric covering my knee. Why am I wearing black instead of gray? When I lift my head, he, Marcus, is across from me. For a split second, he's just like the man I saw across the choosing ceremony hall not long ago. His eyes dark blue to match mine, his mouth pressed into a frown. I'm wearing black because I'm dauntless now, I remind myself. So why am I in an abnegation house, sitting across from my father? I see the outline of the light bulb reflected in my empty plate. This must be a simulation, I think. Then the light above us flickers, and he turns into the man I always see in my fear landscape, a twisted monster with pits for eyes and a wide, empty mouth. He lunges across the table with both hands outstretched, and instead of fingernails, he has razor blades embedded in his fingertips. He swipes at me, and I lurch back, falling off the bench. I scramble on the floor for my balance, then run into the living room. There is another Marcus there, reaching for me from the wall. I search for the front door, but someone has sealed it with cinder blocks, trapping me. Gasping, I sprint up the stairs. At the top, I trip and sprawl on the wooden floor in the hallway. A Marcus opens the closet door from the inside. Another one walks out of my parents' bedroom. Yet another one claws across the floor from the bathroom. I shrink back against the wall. The house is dark. There are no windows. This place is full of him. Suddenly, one of the Marcuses is right in front of me, pressing me to the wall with both hands around my throat. Another one drags his fingernails down my arms, provoking a stinging pain that brings tears to my eyes. I am paralyzed, panicking. I swallow air. I can't scream. I feel pain in my pounding heart and I kick as hard as I can, hitting only air. The Marcus with his hands around my throat shoves me up the wall so my toes drag along the floor. My limbs are limp like a rag doll's. I can't move. This place is full of him. It's not real, I realize. It's a simulation. It's just like the fear landscape. There are more Marcuses now, waiting below me with their hands outstretched, so I'm staring down at a sea of blades. Their fingers clutch at my legs, cutting me, and I feel a hot trail down the side of my neck as the Marcus who is choking me digs in harder. Simulation, I remind myself. I try to send life into every one of my limbs. I imagine my blood on fire, racing through me. I slap my hand against the wall, searching for a weapon. One of the Marcuses reaches up, his fingers poised over my eyes. I scream and thrash as the blades dig into my eyelids. My hands find not a weapon, but a doorknob. I twist it, hard, and fall back into another closet. The Marcuses lose their hold on me. In the closet is a window, just big enough for my body. As they chase me into the darkness, I throw my shoulder against the glass and it shatters. Fresh air fills my lungs. I sit upright in the chair, gasping. I put my hands against my throat, on my arms, on my legs, checking for wounds that aren't there. I can still feel the cuts and the unfurling of blood from my veins, but my skin is intact. My breaths slow down, and with them, my thoughts. Amar is sitting at the computer, hooked up to the simulation, and he's staring at me.
What?
I say, breathless.
You were in there for 5 minutes,
Amar says. Is that long?
No,
he frowns at me.
No, it's not long at all. It's very good, actually.
I put my feet on the floor and hold my head in my hands. I may not have panicked for that long during the simulation, but the image of my warped father trying to claw my eyes out keeps flashing in my mind, causing my heart rate to spike again and again.
Is the serum still in effect?
I say, clenching my teeth. Making me panic?
No. It should have gone dormant when you exited the simulation, he says.
Why? I shake my hands, which are tingling like they're going numb. I shake my head.
It wasn't real, I tell myself. Let it go.
Sometimes the simulation causes lingering panic, depending on what you see in it, Amar says. Let me walk you back to the dormitory.
No. I shake my head. I'll be fine.
He gives me a hard look.
It wasn't a request,
he says. He gets up and opens a door behind the chair. I follow him down a short, dark hallway and into the stone corridors that lead back to the transfer dormitory. The air is cool there, and moist from being underground. I hear our footsteps echo and my own breaths, but nothing else. I think I see something, movement on my left, and I flinch away from it, pulling back against the wall. Amar stops me, putting his hands on my shoulders so I have to look at his face.
Hey, he says, get it together for...
I nod, heat rushing into my face. I feel a deep twinge of shame in my stomach. I am supposed to be dauntless. I am not supposed to be afraid of monster Marcuses creeping up on me in the dark. I lean against the stone wall and take a deep breath.
Can I ask you something?
Amar says. I cringe, thinking he's going to ask me about my father, but he doesn't.
How did you get out of that hallway?
I opened a door, I say.
Was there a door behind you the whole time? Is there one in your old house?
I shake my head. Amar's usually amiable face is serious.
So you created one out of nowhere?
Yeah, I say. Simulations are all in your head, so my head made a door so I could get out. All I had to do was concentrate.
Strange, he says.
What? Why?
Most initiates can't make something impossible happen in these simulations. Because unlike in the fear landscape, they don't recognize that they are in a simulation, he says. And they don't get out of simulations that fast as a result.
I feel my pulse in my throat. I didn't realize these simulations were supposed to be different from the fear landscape. I thought everyone was aware of this simulation while they were in it. But judging by what Amar is saying, this was supposed to be like the aptitude test. And before the aptitude test, my father warned me against my simulation awareness, coached me to hide it. I still remember how insistent he was.
how tense his voice was and how he grabbed my arm a little too hard. At the time, I thought that he would never speak that way unless he was worried about me. Worried for my safety. Was he just being paranoid? Or is there still something dangerous about being aware during simulations? I was like you, Omar says quietly. I could change the simulations. I just thought I was the only one. I want to tell him to keep it to himself, to protect his secrets. But the Dauntless don't care about secrets the way the Abnegation do, with their tight-lipped smiles and identical, orderly houses. Omar is giving me a strange look,